This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at Oracle MBX with Dominic Regan.
Thank you, Ian. Within Oracle, I look after what we call our logistics applications. So transportation, global trade, warehouse management. And I do that across Europe, Middle East and Africa, working with the customers and with the Oracle organization across that geography. And I've spent the last 30 years in that supply chain execution space.
It's an area of the supply chain that's changing rapidly, not just in the way we move goods, but how we track goods, how we integrate those goods. Even part of the disintermediation of the whole supply chain gets impacted here. What have you seen that's been the key technologies in the last 5 years that have had the biggest impact?
Good question. And I'd maybe differentiate between the technologies themselves that we've seen come into play, but also what sort of happened within supply chain as a practice. This is an area where the business practices, business processes tend to drive, if you like, what we do from a technology perspective. Clearly, there are some technologies that we can bring to bear, and I'll come on to those. But if you look within the supply chain itself, say I've worked in that space for the last 30 years. If I go back a ways, back to the sort of late 80s, early 90s, most people looked at their supply chain from an inside-out perspective. They were very focused on how do I make my supply chain as effective as possible. What we've really seen in the last, let's say, 5 years is that switch very much to the outside in. As we've seen the growth of the consumer, not just the consumers themselves, but in fact how they influence companies. I'd use the example, if I order something from Amazon, I can choose the type of delivery, I can decide when it's going to turn up, I can influence that. And that's then moved from a business to consumer to a business to business space, where now, if you like, companies say, rather than just looking at their process and optimizing that, but having to look at their customers, and they're having to segment those customers. They have to understand what drives each of those segments of their customer base, and they're having to set supply chains up that will manage the requirements of those individual segments. And that's been quite a seismic shift, because what that really drives companies to do is they have to be agile. They can't set up their supply chains based, if you like, on what their systems and solutions do. They have to look at what their customers want, and then they have to mold their supply chains around that.
When you're talking to customers, as you say, it's now shifted from what was originally just a B2B process. It's now gone B2C. In fact, many large manufacturers are completely disintermediating the people in the middle, the distributors. How complex is that for them to change their systems to actually accommodate this? Because if you're no longer being driven by what you do, you're driven by an external force, which is not one force, but thousands, tens of thousands of forces. Your ability to react, but also to do so cost effectively, is business challenging.
It is a real challenge. And it's a challenge that certainly a lot of customers I work with, not just customers, but companies I talk to in the market, they're all struggling with that. It's a challenge that pretty much transcends industries, from automotive to consumer goods to healthcare to natural resources. They all see that challenge. That has sort of been reflected in the shift of a lot of the initiatives are not IT-driven, they're business-driven. And that pendulum has swung back towards the business itself, towards operations, because they see the challenge that's coming in from the outside world. What that's forced companies to do is to find ways they can enable their supply chain through the technology they use, rather than having it constrained by the technologies that they use. What that's done is it has tended to drive companies to look for more standardized solutions. I mean, I use the phrase, good enough is good enough, because what I mean by that is, and if I went back 10 years, companies would have said, this is the way I work. You have to be able to replicate that 100% in the solution you provide. Now, because of that level of uncertainty, companies are like, well, actually, this might be the way I work today, but in 6 months, 12 months, 3 years' time, it could be quite, quite different. I don't want to have solutions that support how I work today. I want them to support me how I work tomorrow. And for that then tends to drive moving towards a more standardized solution, because that then lets them get upgrades quicker and keep up to date. It tries to remove the constraints of the technology as a solution.
But how do they look forward that fast? It's not an industry that's known for rapid change. It's not an industry that's known for massive investment in technology. It'll buy trucks, it'll buy ways to track trucks, it'll buy systems to track where things are in warehousing. But actually the technology to actually deal with that number of customers and that complexity and that changing landscape, that's not been the major investment for an awful lot of the players in the space. How are they shifting their business models?
It's a very good question. In many ways, they're having to take a more innovative and entrepreneurial view of things. From that point of view, to some extent, they're almost sort of second-guessing and having to predict where they see the market going. They face lots of new disruptors, both from a technology but also new entrants to the market. From there, again, it's back to this thing of, if I look at the solutions that I use, and I'm not saying these numbers are correct, but bear with me for a moment, 90% of what I do is pretty standard. It's the 10% that really differentiates me, what we would call systems of differentiation, systems of innovation. Companies are looking and saying, 90%. There are solutions out there that will do that far better than I could in the past. Those solutions, they're standardized. I can use those to run the bread and butter of my business. If I have to run a supply chain for one customer or 100 customers, they offer the flexibility to support that. What I'll then do is I'll then look at that 10% of differentiation or innovation and say, well, that's where I want to use, if you like, my expensive resource that I have myself. I'll focus my resource where it's going to give me most return for the money. I'll be happy to have the 90% done by a more standardized solution.
If we think about technologies, there are three obvious technologies that come into play here: automation, artificial intelligence, and blockchain. And they all impact different parts of the area that you cover. Can you give us a view of what you're seeing on automation first?
Probably automation, if we're talking robotic type automation, where I'm largely seeing that is in areas like the warehousing side of our business. There are a number of initiatives running at the moment around sort of autonomous vehicles. A number of companies have taken out patents for autonomous delivery vehicles. But to me, those are, my guess, maybe sort of 3 to 5 years out from real practical application. In warehousing terms, if I went back 15 years and I worked for an organization that did the software for automation. So, you know, automation has been around for a long time, certainly in warehousing terms, whether that's storage and retrieval systems, automated guided vehicles. Those have been there for quite some time. Interestingly, that first wave of automation was really about replacing expensive resource. The current wave of automation is much more around just replacing resource that isn't there. The driver has sort of subtly shifted. It's maybe a problem we have as supply chain professionals is we're not very good at attracting people to come into this industry. But I say in automation terms, certainly from a hardware perspective, I see it more in the warehousing side than the pure transportation side, although I do see that coming in future.
How many of them are using IoT as part of their automation? The ability to detect temperature shifts, particularly if you're storing medicines or food, the ability to detect other environmental issues such as excessive heat, smoke, dust, even earthquakes. These things all happen around, and that has an impact on how your automated systems function.
Yes, exactly. We see the impact of IoT in terms of the assets themselves, the trucks, the trailers. Is the truck overheating? Has it got a puncture? Is it being driven too fast? That interaction back with things like driver behavior, but then also with the containers, the freight, the pallets. So if it was, let's say, pharmaceutical and I have a cold chain, I have an asset running chilled, keeping the product within the right temperature range. Again, all of those types of things we're seeing from IoT. If you then go into the manufacturing space, I was with a customer recently out in Egypt who's in the consumer goods sector. They're baking products all the time. Where they see looking at the benefit from IoT is around, you know, monitoring maybe the oven temperature or the flow of product going through there, or actually having cameras mounted that then take a photo of the baked product, compare it to a color chart, and say, well, actually, has it been baked the right amount? Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to reduce wastage. And the problem is, if somebody isn't actually looking at what comes off the conveyor, it can run for 10, 20, 30 minutes, and the products haven't been baked correctly. That's the sort of area that I'm seeing the direct impact of IoT. But then also you have the indirect impact, which is here's all this data coming in. What do we do with it? And I say one thing we're not short of in supply chain already is data, and look at what's coming down the line.
Which is a great segue to artificial intelligence, because one of the challenges we've always had in logistics is how do I get the best route? How do I reduce my costs? How do I speed up the ability for my drivers to get from A to B without running the risk of breaking the law? Artificial intelligence has arrived. It's getting that information. It's able to get information from IoT. More importantly, it can also, from a manufacturing perspective, start to do predictive analytics based on time of year or if there's an event or something else going on. Do we need to ramp up? Do we need more warehouse space? Do we need less space? How widely used are artificial intelligence projects at the moment? And are customers really locked and loaded? Or are we all still at the touch, see, is it real moment?
My short answer is I think we're just starting to see the emergence of some very strong use cases around things like artificial intelligence and machine learning, which I think going back perhaps to the introduction, business to business is now mirroring what happened in business to consumer. Because if you or I go online and I browse something in a website, I look at a product, sure enough, when I go into my email in the banner at the side, it starts showing me offers on that product. And again, that's the type of machine learning and adaptive intelligence we've come to expect as part of everyday life. From a supply chain perspective, we're a little behind the curve, if I'm honest. The advantage of those types of technologies is computers are very good at taking huge amounts of data, understanding the relationships in there, and then being able to analyze and provide the information and either operate on that directly or provide it to you as a suggestion as here's to what you want to do. That's where, within supply chain, the opportunities are huge, because we have all the data within our businesses that we're constantly building up, but actually there's a huge amount of data outside as well that would be really, really useful. You talked about sensing things like earthquakes, but perhaps it's not something quite that calamitous. Maybe it's the next time the beast from the east comes in and we have bad weather. Understanding that that's coming, being able to take that and being able to look and say, what did we do last time? What was the impact of that? Using the machine learning to understand, say, what we did from it last time, to be able to predict what we should do this time, and then apply it out within the business, that I think is a really interesting area of development that's coming up.
How much is the delay in take-up caused by natural reticence in the industry, and how much of it is a lack of skills to actually write the correct applications, to translate those what-if applications that we've had for decades into something that AI can understand?
From a personal point of view, if I had a child going through university and they said, what career should I go for? Data scientist, data miner, data knowledge, that would probably be the area that I'd suggest. Because I think, you know, you absolutely highlight a critical problem, which is bringing that data science and being able to utilize it within something as practical as supply chain. And that, for us, is a real challenge at the moment. Having said that, I think from a technology perspective, there's an awful lot of clever stuff we can do. And I say we do see a lot of that in the business-to-consumer market. Again, you're right. I would say a healthy level of skepticism within supply chain professionals when they look at technology. They've seen it a number of times in the past, things like radio frequency ID. It was going to be the big savior of supply chain. Did it happen? No. It took quite some time for people to realize where the value would come from areas like RFID. Of course, it does deliver real value to people. We see the practical examples now. But did it completely revolutionize the industry? No. And I think that's where supply chain professionals look with a healthy degree of skepticism and say, we heard some things from the technology providers in the past. We want to make sure that there's real value there before we jump into this with both feet.
Talking of bleeding edge technology, that segues us into blockchain beautifully. We've seen some very successful blockchain work. We've seen banks now adopting it. We're seeing payment systems. It's got a real place to play within trade finance. All those things where you can see an obvious benefit. But when we come to the complexities of logistics, it's not quite as simple as that. We have the attempt to create an open customs mechanism headed by Maersk. That looks quite exciting at face value, but there's an awful lot to be done to persuade all those customs agents around the world to change. And the proposed savings, well, I've been around long enough to know that proposed savings never filter through to me, the consumer. From the logistics industry where you look at it, how much is going on within blockchain? Is it a discussion point? Is it a beta point? Are we seeing real applications coming to market?
Certainly it's a discussion point. It is, I would say, rare that you go to any type of supply chain conference and the subject of blockchain doesn't come up. Having said that, I think we've seen some early adopter examples, you know, the classic ones around the traceability of food. We've seen those, and clearly the value there is the speed of exchanging transactional data and particularly the ability to retrieve that data. There are examples that, whilst they're certainly interesting and there's certainly some value there, they are the sort of things that I'd look at and think, well, you can sort of do that at the moment. Blockchain enables the improvement in performance, but is it a completely new business model? And I'd say no. But I do think we're starting to see the emergence of those models. There's an initiative run by an organization, it's called INS Ecosystem, and they're linking the consumer goods companies and the consumer directly. And they're using blockchain as the mechanism for doing that, for doing all of the transactions between those parties. But they're also looking at, how do I bring in fulfillment centers? Clearly it's something that's aimed at the major conurbations. But then from a fulfillment side, which I think is quite an interesting evolution, is there was an announcement that they've signed up with PostNL, the Dutch post office, on the fulfillment side. The reason why I find that interesting is because it's changing the dynamic of the supply chain itself. And that, I think, is something maybe we didn't see with RFID. And even if it's only through PowerPoint and whiteboarding at the moment, we're seeing those challenges to the traditional way of running supply chain emerge. That, I think, is something of real interest. And that's why you can't afford to ignore it. Would I bet my house on it? No. But would I be keeping a real watch on what's going on? Absolutely.
If we look at the projects we've got out there at the moment, they all tend to be permissive. Single company or small groups of organizations in the same permissive blockchain. One of the challenges for this to work for wider supply chain is it has to have interledger communication. And that's not just interledger within the business, but that's interledger across multiple businesses. From an Oracle perspective, how much work is going on at the moment looking at that interledger problem?
To be candid, blockchain is not my area of specialization. We have a solution called Blockchain Cloud Service. Our interest at the moment is mostly around those permitted blockchains. There's the natural tendency to want to crawl, walk, run. And so let's start with things that are under our control before, wham, opening it up to the whole wide world. Having said that, you only have to look at the history of what happened with the internet to see how actually the real value was created, as you say, when you gave the ability to, in this case, to link blockchains together, to have all of those parties involved, have the visibility there. That needs to be tempered, also with an eye on the internet, of things around privacy. Both individual and corporate privacy, things like security. My personal view is let's start with something that we can control, let's understand where the value is, and then let's let the value of bringing interconnected blockchains together, let's let the value drive that. Let's not do that before we really understand the full implications of it.
One of the things we hear every year at a conference is how the pace of technology change is accelerating. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Looking forward over the next 3 years, just a small period, what changes are you expecting to hit your sector?
If I look specifically in the logistics space, I think we've touched on a couple of those already. I think things like the wide-scale use of automation, both in terms of the practical automation in terms of warehousing, but also in terms of the autonomy, I absolutely see that coming. There will be an increasing use of the Uber cargo concept. There are plenty of companies out there at the moment that offer those type of, I would call it crowd-based logistics, but it's quite an immature market. It's maturing very rapidly. I see that as having a significant impact. There are already large corporations out there who are trying to evaluate where can that type of logistics add value. Is it going to be entirely outsourced? No. For certain business areas, I see that having a real use within major corporations. The Internet of Things, we're sort of on the cusp of that really hitting. We hear examples about cars being connected, the old one about fridges being connected, reordering your milk. But actually, I think the connected product, connected people, connected process, the real implications of that have yet to hit us. There are technologies like drones and 3D printing. 3D printing, for example, at the consumer level, that has the potential to have a significant impact on supply chain. Because then I go back to, as a manufacturer, perhaps producing a more standardized product, because it can be personalized by the consumer themselves.
It's interesting. I talked to toy manufacturers a couple of years ago about 3D printing. And if you think about a blister pack of product, that only costs pennies to make. But by the time they've packaged, shipped, it's gone through the supply chain, it's gone to the toy store, and it's gone to the consumer, that's into the pounds. And part of the discussion was how could they take out a lot of the cost by licensing the retailer to manufacture themselves. And oddly, they found themselves in the same problem that we have with CDs, if you remember back 15 years ago, that you would walk into a store, select a dozen tracks, and they burn it for you in the store. The whole licensing control of IP suddenly became very complex. I agree, it could revolutionize, but I think we're probably a long way off some of the legalities of that.
I think it's important that you raise that point around whether it's the legalities of doing it, whether it's a question of the privacy, what data do we share that enables us to personalize. I think there are a number of important, you could call them sort of ethical points there, that we only have to look at what's happening currently in terms of social media, how those companies are having their feet held to the fire, to then say, okay, well, what's the implications of that for us, both as manufacturers and as consumers and as part of that supply chain? If we're not looking at it now, we're going to be forced to look at it in the future. We need to be cautious in the race for keeping up with technology. We're looking at the ethical side of things as well. Automation is a classic one. It's great having automation if it takes away the boring, mundane, repetitive tasks. But at the end of the day, that's someone's job. The same with adaptive intelligence. That's great. But actually, if you're taking away some of those capabilities, what are the social implications of that? And that's perhaps something that we don't give enough attention to.
I think it's going to be an interesting few years. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.